Aleph. Two, four, six, eight, 9 lines in the top. Okay, the Gemara was discussing when do you start turning over the beds, meaning when does Avela start? Does it start from you go out of the house or from after the Levaya? And there was an argument between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, and the story happened, Rabbi Gamliel passed away, one said to do this, one said to do that. Now the Gemara says, Tan Rabban Rabban Alert. We know that if somebody is sitting Shiva, Shabbos there's no Shiva. So the question of the Gemara in simple English is, when does the morning before Shabbos start? Stop, I mean. That's when before Shabbos is it over? So it says, Min ha-mincha l'mayla, from mincha upward. But Tosis over here explains that it's a suffix. Okay, Tosis explains it's a suffix over here, what mincha we're talking about, mincha ketana or mincha gedela. Now it means as follows. In halacha, you have midday, what's called chatzos. A half an hour of halachic hours after midday is what's called mincha gedela. Because in the year when the Erev Pesach, you know, was early, we got to Maaseh with Shabbos, there would be makriv to carbon Pesach a half an hour after midday. So therefore it became, and there would be makriv, the carbon mincha, whatever. So therefore, mincha gedola is a half an hour after midday. Mincha ketana is 9 hours into the day. That means, if a day starts at 6 and ends at 6, chatzos is exactly 12 noon. Mincha gedola begins 12:30. Mincha ketana is 3, thank you. Mincha ketana is 3 o'clock. So now the Gemara says, when does Avela stop? For Shabbos? Huh? Well, the Gemara just says min amincha l'mayla. So Taisa says the Rishayim. Taisa says pirsh b'Taisa that the mesapkale in mincha gedola or mincha ketana. Okay, but Taisa says that's why they don't sit on the afterwards. They don't sit on the chair. I mean, they are able to go sit on the chair. The halacha, in fact, is even more than this. The halacha is not even mincha ketana. It's plaga mincha. Plaga mincha is an hour and a quarter. I'm sorry, mincha gedola, it's a minimum mistake, it's not 3, it's 3:30, you know why it's a 3. Mincha ketana is 3:30, 9.5 hours into the day, which is 3:30. Now, from 3:30 to 6 is 2.5 hours. Plaga mincha is an hour and a quarter after mincha ketana, or an hour and a quarter before sundown, which is the same thing. Okay, so that's when Avela stops. 4:45. Huh?
4:45.
Well, before 4:45, correct. So he says, Amir Rabba Bar Huna says, Afo became, even though you could turn the beds right side up, you know, as you stop right side up, and a yeshivala, you cannot sit on an upright bed, ashetachshach, until it gets dark. Because this opinion says, the time of mincha is only to straighten out the beds. But Avelis really goes until the night. That's what Rabba Bar Huna said. But I said, halachically, you can stop at plaga mincha. Now the Gemara says, on Matzoy Shabbos, when do you start again? Matzoy Shabbos, when does the Shiva can start again? She says, Afal Pishen Lele Shiva Leyemechot, even though you only have to sit one more day. I mean, Sunday morning you're already getting up from Shiva. Nevertheless, you have to overturn the bed again. Even though it's for a short period of time. Now the Ramban learns, they bring down to the Ramban, the Ramban has an interesting opinion. The Ramban says that the seventh day that you get up is even at night. That means according to the Ramban, and this is according to the Ramban, it's a big chiddush that Gemara is saying. According to the Ramban, if you have to get up Sunday morning from Shiva the seventh day, Saturday night you sit a little bit and you're over. We paskin, like all the other Rishenim argue, and they say, no, Miksa Sayyem Kukuli doesn't begin at night. This that we say, part of the day is like the whole day, is it from the morning, but not from the night. But according to the Ramban, it's a very big chiddush of the Gemara, that even though you're going to right away turn it back side, right side up, because you're going to finish Shiva right away, you still need to do it. Even though you might not even be sleeping on the bed that night, because by then Shiva is over, according to the Ramban. Nevertheless, you have to do it anyway.
Why
what?
Why
Because mixus hayyim kakule is of the yim. Now, okay. Then the Gemara says, "Son Rabban, Rabbanon learned. Okay, for mitase, one who's obligated, like we learned already before, we don't turn over the beds. But the imamish used to turn over the beds upside down, that the poles of the bed, which were the legs of the bed, would be pointing upwards. Huh? It was a sign of avelus. Today they don't do it. Chukas hagoy, chesed the poskim, right? We learned before in the Gemara." But now, Tana Rabbanan, Rabbanan learned, okay, for mitasi, one who turns over his bed, who's obligated to turn over his bed, lay mitasi bovado kefir, not only does he turn over his own bed, elokol mita sheyeshe b'teich beisu kefir. Every bed in the house he has to do. Meaning, every bed that you sit on or sleep on, you have to turn over. Now, some opinions say it's only his wife and kids' bed. Other rishenim write, every bed in the house. In other words, we'll soon see in the Gemara, the concept of turning over the bed is nothing to do with Shiva. There's a din in Shiva, and there's a din of turning over the bed. And one thing has nothing to do with the next. There's an obligation to turn over the bed. That means even though nobody else is sitting Shiva, they still have to turn over the bed. Huh?
What's it comfortably?
Yeah, it's a part of the system. Really, that's what it is. And he says, I feel not even that, even more so. I feel yeshli es mitas basar mekemis, even if you have 10 beds in 10 different places, meaning in different parts of the house, even though you're not even going to be going into those rooms, nevertheless, kreifer is cool. What?
Make the beds?
No. They actually turn the beds over.
They do?
Not now. I said, now they don't do it. But in the olden times, there was an obligation to be kefir samita.
They said it's a sign of witchcraft.
And he says,
"How do you cover the mirrors?
Huh? Why do you cover the mirrors, or with what?
Because people dive in there. That's so you cover."
There's two reasons why you cover the mirrors. One reason you cover the mirrors is because if you're davening, then you're not allowed to face a mirror. But there's another reason, because an oval shouldn't look in a mirror to adorn themselves, like. It's a logic difference. You have to do the bathroom mirrors. I mean, at least in the mourner's bathroom. The minig is that you do it. Even though some poskim write the reason, today, yeah. Some poskim write the reason why you cover the mirrors is because of davening. Then it will be only in the room you're davening.
But can you cover all the mirrors?
Look at yourself in the mirror? In the bathroom?
An novelist says shouldn't be doing it. I mean, they could see just to make sure that they're...
still alive.
Yeah. Okay.
What about the woman? Because she has to fix herself to chill a little.
Okay, so minimal she could. Can't sit there for an hour and a half. I feel like Hamisha Achim, even if there's five brothers. Well, Meisach, one of them died. Kulam Kefin. Everyone has to turn over the bed in their house where they're sitting Shiva. Even though Lacheda, there's one house where the deceased died. You have to turn it over anyway. And he says, what happens in my samita miyuchedes lekelim? Wherefore was a bed, not to sit on or to sleep on, but as a storage place, you know, to put kelim on. Ain't tarach lechfeis, so you don't have to turn it over. In other words, because as the Rashi, Ramban explained him, it's not a bed, it's a chest. It looks like a bed, but it's really a chest. So the Gemara basically is saying, this din of turning over the bed applies to any bed that you sit on or sleep on. In the time of the Gemara, it had to be turned over. Mamish, upside down.
No,
now we don't do it. Now he says, Dargish, and the Gemara is going to say what a Dargish is. Dargish ain't tzarech lechfeisei. You don't have to turn it over. Elezekfei. But you stand it up on its end. For instance, if this would be a regular bed, yeah, so they would turn it over like this. Right? That's kefin samita. Dargish, if this was a dargish, whatever it means, we'll soon see, they would have to stand it up on its, like this, lays flat, they would have to stand it up on one side. But not turn it over, just stand it up.
Dargish is this
tool? No, we don't know yet. 1 second. Elazekvi. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, dargish matir es karbitov. In the case of a dargish, we're going to soon see, because the Gemara is going to explain what it means, we'll understand what this is talking about. You untie the loops, and it falls down by itself. In other words, according to this, it would be like this. Well, even before we see it exactly in the Gemara, what it was. Like he says, a dargish was stretching out a sheet of material across a wooden frame. In fact, I have pictures of it on the next page.
The corner, here.
Yeah, I see.
And, but that would be a dargish, according to some people. And the other one was a regular bed. What they would do is, they would stretch out material over a wooden frame, and they would fasten it to the frame with loops. Okay? So the Shimon Gamliel says, you don't need to stand up the dargish upright. All you have to do is remove the loops, and the thing's going to fall in by itself. Okay, that's the fact. There's an argument. Is Rav Shimon Gamliel stricter or lenient than the first opinion? Some Rishonim say he's more lenient, and some people say he's stricter. He says, the Mukhiyasif explains Rav Shimon Gamliel is more stringent than the Tanakhama, and he says standing the Dargish is not sufficient to fulfill your obligation. Ritva says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the more lenient. That means you don't have to stand it up. All you have to do is take off the loops. So it's an argument like who's stricter. What's the difference? Because Allah is divrei hameikel. The Allah is like the more lenient opinion. So the question is, which one's the more lenient opinion over here? But the Gemara anyway is going to pass on the Shimon Gamliel. So now the Gemara says, my dargish. What?
It's to put it on the side?
Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, my dargish. What's this dargish that we're talking about? So Amr Ula says, Arsa de Gado. It's a bed of good fortune. Now God, like Rashi says in Chumash, why was he called Ba God? Ba Mazel. Okay, so God in Hebrew is Mazel. So he says, it's Arsa de Gado. What does it mean? It was used to set aside a bed for good fortune. Used to leave an empty bed in the house for good fortune. So that's where some of the Rishonim learn. Other Rishonim question it and they write, that's sorcery, which is mamish forbidden. So therefore the Ran learns, they would designate the bed for the guardian angel of the house. Because it was done in honor of the Malach, it wasn't witchcraft. So it wasn't for mazel, it was for respect. Like, you leave a bed for the angel, so to speak. But that's what it is. Amalei Rabba, so Rabba said, 1 minute. That cannot mean, that cannot be what dargish means. Why? He says, Alameyato, Gabi Melech, there's a din of a Bayer king that says like this, that Kol Ha'am Mesub in Ala Oretz, when a king lost a parent, okay, and the king has to be served the first meal, you know, the bagels and eggs, Sudas Avram, the din is, Kol Ha'am Mesub in Ala Oretz. All the people that serve him, they sit on the ground. But he's a king, he's not allowed to sit on the ground. He sits on the bed of dargish. So he says like this, if a dargish means a bed of good fortune, he said, mi'ika midi, is there such a thing, that until now, he should not see them upon him. And now you put him on it. Meaning, a king would never sit on a dargish. Because it's like a bed of good fortune, why should a king sit on it? All of a sudden now you want him to sit on it. You know, because he's a mourner, he sits on a bed of good fortune. Like this, he would never sit on it. Now he's going to sit on it. How could you say that's what a dargish means? So the Gemara says, okay, so therefore, this is what Rabba challenges Ula. Ula said it means a bed of good fortune. So he said, how could it mean a bed of good fortune? Then a king, how could a king sit on it? So he says, Maskal of Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi challenges Rabba's challenge. He says, my kushya. What type of question is this? Me did ava achilu shtia. It's like any eating and drinking. Da'ad adina, until now, lo yechlinu v'leyashkina. Until now, the king doesn't eat our food and doesn't drink our food. Right? The king has his own chefs. Yet, hashta, now that he's sitting Shiva, echlin of Ashkina, we gave him to eat, we give him to drink. So what are you asking? Because he never did it until now, he can't do it. In other words, he could do it. So dargish can still mean a bed of good fortune. The king never sat on it. So what? Now he's sitting on it. Just like he never ate our food, now he's eating our food. The same thing with the dargish. So therefore he says, Rabbi's kasha, question is not a question. He says, you want to ask a question, Anul? I'll tell you what to ask. Ali kasha, if you want to ask a question, ha kasha, this is the question. What's the question? He says, the Tanan, we learned in the Braiser Mishnah, dargish ein etzorach lechfeisit. It says in the Braiser Mishnah, you don't have to turn over the dargish, elazekva, you can stand it up on its end, right?
Yeah.
So he says, e arsedegado, if it's a bed of good fortune, hamai ein etzorach lechfeisit, why don't you have to turn it over? Because we learned, hakei famitasi. It says a person who turns over the bed, lay me tasi bavadu kefa. Not only does he turn over his bed, ela kol mita sheyashli b'terech basic kefa. Every bed in the house he has to turn over. So why is a bed of good fortune not considered one of the beds in the house? What does the Mishnah say? Not only do you turn over your bed, every bed in the house you have to turn over. Now, if a dargish means a bed, a bed of good fortune, then you do have to turn it over. Yet the Mishnah says, a dargish, you don't have to overturn, you just have to stand it up on its end. Right? But the Mishnah says, every bed has to be turned over. So why is a dargish, if it's a bed of good fortune, but it's a bed, why doesn't you have to turn it over? So obviously it can't mean it's a bed.
Or maybe it's a special bed.
Oh, 1 second. So I was going to ask, no, I'll answer you, because a bed designated for Kalim,
okay,
you also don't have to turn over, even though it's called Mita. So again, the Gemara, to my Kashi, what's his question?
He said also a bed, any bed that you sit on or sleep on.
Right.
You can sit.
That's what the Gemara is asking now. Midava Mita Miuchedes Kalim, just like a bed which is designated for Kalim, because you don't sit on it. And you don't sleep on it, you don't have to turn over. So dargish also is a bed you don't sleep on. It's a bed of good fortune. No, it's a bed of good fortune. Nobody sits on it. Just like a bed which is designated for Kalim. So why should a dargish be any different? Okay. So now the Gemara says a different question. So Ravashi's question is also not a question. And Ula's opinion that a dargish means a fortune bed. He says, what's the question? He says, this is the question. Reb Shim Gamliel says, the Mishnah said, dargish mata karbitov, you take off the loops, me'elav, and it falls down by itself. Yeah? So he says, v'isal kadaitach arse degado, if a dargish is a bed of fortune, ma'kabitinisli, it's not, doesn't have loops. There's no loops in a dargish bed. So how could Reb Shimon Gamliel say a dargish, you undo the loops if it doesn't have any loops? A bed doesn't have loops. So explain like this. What okay, it means is the Gemara is explained like this. Where is this thing over here? Yeah. Okay, well, the way Rav is going to, I mean, the way the Gemara's Rabbi is going to explain the Gemara, we can understand what undoing the loops. A normal bed doesn't have loops. And dargish, therefore the Gemara doesn't have loops. So how could Reb Shimon Gamliel say, a dargish should undo the loops if there's no loops? And the Gemara Taka says this refutes Ula's interpretation of a dargish, that it means a bed of fortune. Because the bed of good fortune doesn't have loops. So how could Reb Shimon Gamliel say, undo the loops? So what does a dargish mean? The Gemara says. So it says like this. Ki osir Rabbim, when Rabbim came from Eretz Yisrael, Amar lo harom Rabbanan. One of the Chachamim said, Rav Tachlifa bar Marav Shmei, his name was Rav Tachlifa, the Westerner. Because they went to Eretz Yisrael, was west of Bavel. So they called Marava Eretz Yisrael. He says, Dav Shchiyah b'shukad al-Gudoi, this Rav Tachlifa, used to be in the leather markets a lot. And he said, what's a dargish? Arsa ditzla, a bed of leather. Now, it means like this. What is a bed of leather? Rich people, when they traveled, They didn't have hotels like we have today. They used to travel with collapsible beds. They consisted of wooden frames with holes in the sides, not like a regular bed. And it would be, loops were hung, and then it would be a leather sheet with straps at his hand would be suspended from the frame by looping its straps through the loops hanging from the frame. And then they would stick in legs. So it's actually a leather bed that was a collapsible bed that nobility used to travel with. So those beds had loops. It wasn't like a regular bed. See, the regular bed had ropes extended across the entire length and width of the frames. Okay? And the ropes would be tied around. They weren't loops. This bed, and you can see it, you have in the pictures, this was a leather bed with four legs, and there were holes on the side where they had loops, and then the leather would have loops, and they would strap the leather loops into the frame loops. But over there was a tack of loops, it wasn't a regular bed. So it wasn't a bed of fortune, because the way Ula learned the bed of fortune is a regular bed, just nobody slept on it. So then the Gemara finally asked, how can you have loops in such a bed? There's no loops. So the Gemara says, yeah, what Rabin explains, what is the arsa, what the dargish is, it's a leather bed that was a collapsible bed, so they traveled with it, and the taka was made out of loops. And therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, you don't have to straight stand it up on its side. What you do is take off the loops and the leather would automatically fall down.
And that type is not included in the Mishnah case of you take
correct
out the beds.
Right. Because it's not really a mita as a regular bed. According to Ula, it was a regular bed, just nobody slept on it. It Menami Taka learned that Amr Rabbi Yirmiyah explains what's a dargish, siruge mituche, meaning the bindings are in the middle of the bed, not around the top of the bed like a regular bed where there's no loops. A dargish, he says, is in the middle of leather sheet by the frame of loops inserted through the holes. Mita, a regular bed though, siruga al gaba is bindings over it. Meaning, on a regular bed, they didn't have beds like we have today. They had ropes, okay? And then they put straw over the ropes, right? So they took the ropes and they tied it around the frame. There was no loops. They just took the ropes and tied it around the frame. And then they put whatever they put on top of it. So over there, Taka, that's a regular mita. There's no loops. But a dargish, he says, is connected in the middle with loops. So you see, that's the definition of a dargish. Then the Gemara comes to the maskana, so to speak. Amr Rabbi Yaakov ben Racha, Amr Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Rabbi Yaakov ben Yaakov, the name of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. The halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that when it comes to dargish, you don't have to stand it up on the side. All you have to do is take off the loops, and it automatically falls down.
So why were they disputing whether Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was strict or lenient since
Halacha follows? Right. So either the pshat is Gemara saying that it's the lenient opinion, but the Rishonim are arguing b'chlal. What is the Rav Shimon Gamliel? Is he more lenient or stricter? In other words, the Gemara is saying that even let's say Rav Shimon Gamliel is stricter, in this case the halacha is anywhere like Rav Shimon Gamliel. In other words, when there was no clear cut ruling, then the halachic divrei ha-meikl. If there's a clear-cut ruling, then it's not necessarily halachic divrei ha-meikl. What?
If there were most things that we do in halacha is with opinion of people. If a dargish was a bed that was optional to sleep on as rich people, they would not want that anybody will come into the house and think that you're sleeping on that bed if it was be upside down or even on a
side. What happens? He's traveling and he has to sit shiva.
Yeah.
So then that bed, you stand up.
Yeah, but still people see it all fall up and it could turn it up and sleep on it.
They're not going to do that because the fact that it's up, they're going to know that somebody's sitting shiva. See, he brings down over here, I mean, it's a little bit later in the Gemara, but he brings down, even though he does not sleep in the comfort of a regular bed, he's still required to overturn his bed. The obligation of the mourner to overturn his bed is not that he should sleep in discomfort, rather it's a requirement in its own right. That means the Gemara is going to say, even if you sleep on the floor, you still have to turn over your bed. The question, why do I have to turn over my bed if I'm not sleeping on it? So, in other words, normally you would think that why do you have to turn over the bed? That it shouldn't be comfortable. Right? But the Gemara says no, because even if you're not sleeping on the bed, you have to turn it over. Why? Because nothing to do with discomfort. Even if you're sleeping on the floor, you have to turn over your bed. It's a separate thing completely. And then the Gemara says, Itmanami, so we learned also, or not Itmanami, Amid of Yaakov Barach, Amid of Asi, Mita Shenekleo Yetzin, a bed whose double posts protrude. Meaning, he says, there's a picture of it here also. It's a double, two-poster canopy. Zeik vevedaya, you stand it upright and it's sufficient. It is a tent. It's a tent, this picture. It's a tent with four legs. So it's a canopy bed, but it goes up, because it has one pole holding up on this side, one pole on the other side. So he says that bed, you also don't have to turn over. All you have to do is stand it up on its side also. Then the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan learned, what happens of Yosh and Agabi Kisa, what happens if a person is not sleeping on his bed? He's sleeping on a chair, or Agabu dying on a large mortar, or Agabi Karkor, he's sleeping on the ground. Yeah? So L'cheira, why does he have to turn over his beds? The Gemara says, L'yotze Yedei Chevase, he didn't fulfill his obligation. Even though, like we said before, even though he's mamish uncomfortable in his sleeping, he still has to turn over the bed. Rabbi Yechon said, what does it mean that he didn't fulfill his obligation? He did not fulfill the obligation of turning over the bed. In other words, the Mefarshim explained, turning over the bed is an obligation that has nothing to do with comfort or not comfort. During Shiva, you have to turn over the bed. I mean, the time of the Gemara. Now the Gemara says, we learned before in the Gemara that an Avel is not allowed to do melacha. You're not allowed to do work, right? You're not allowed to go to work and so on. How about household chores?
He said no.
No, we didn't say no. Then we didn't say no, we said yes. Tan Rabbanan learned. Mechabdim, you can sweep the house. Marbitzin is, they used to sprinkle water, they do it in the camps also. They sprinkle water on the floors to keep the dust down, that it shouldn't keep going up. So you're allowed to, Mechabni can sweep the floor, Marbitzin can sprinkle water on the floor, Bebeis of on the house of a mourner. Or Madichin, Kodis, Kaisis, Sleichis, Kitunius, Bebeis Oval, and you're allowed to wash plates, cups, jars, bottles in the house of a mourner. Why? Because those are household works. They're not considered, work malacha per se, but a mevin is a mugmer v'sapsam in the base of. But you cannot bring incense and spices to a house of the mourner. Why? Because the aroma in the house is not befitting for a mourner's house. You don't bring this, but you could do the, you can get rid of the dirt, but you don't bring perfumes like into the house. So the Gemara says, Aini, it's not true. How could you say you don't bring spices into a house? We learned, Vatani, Bakapada, taught in the Braise, Eimavarchin, Leia Mugma, Velea Psamim, Bereisa Oval. He says, in a mourner's house, you don't make a bracha psamim. He says, Brocha, Deleimavarchin, what does the Braise say? You don't make a bracha. But Asuri Maisin, but you could bring it. The fact that the Braise says, you don't make a bracha psamim in a mourner's house, shows that you could bring psalmim there. Because if you can't bring psalmim there, how do I need to tell me you can't make a bracha? If it's not there, for sure you can't make a bracha.
Or maybe you're exempt from saying a bracha in Bevet HaAvel.
No, he says, yeah, that means it's there though. Right. The Braise is saying that even though it's there, you don't make a bracha. If it's not there, you can't say don't make a bracha. Right? The fact that it says don't make a bracha on it, I mean, even though it's there, you don't make a bracha. So the question we just got through saying you're not allowed to bring it there. So the Gemara answers a very interesting answer. Lekashi, it's a, and here there's again machlekes rishenim what the Gemara means. It says lekashi abe beis avul abe beis menachemim. And here there's two ways in the rishenim of learning. One way of learning is where the dead body is, you could bring it psalmim, because a dead body gives off a foul odor. So the psalmim is not to bring in a good smell as much as get rid of the bad smell. But in the comfort of this house, where there's sitting shiva, where there's no dead body anymore, then you're not allowed to bring. Other mefashim learn just the opposite. In the mourner's house, you could bring, because other people are there. So you're doing it for the other people. But where the dead body is, then you're not allowed to. So there's two ways of learning the Gemara. But the Gemara answers like this. One b'raisa says you could bring psalmim in, one b'raisa says you can't. So Gemara answers, one is speaking where the dead corpse is, and one is speaking in the comforter's house. Meaning where there's no mess. So you could go either way. One opinion that Rishenim says, you could do it where the mess is to undo the foul odor, but not in the mourner's house. And other Mepharshim say, no, the opposite. In the other people's, in the mourner's house, where other people are there, then you're allowed to do it for the other people. And here you can't. So there's a famous story with the Rebbe. When the Rebbe was sitting shiva after his mother in Tavshin Chafei, so all the rabbis that came to the Rebbe would tell him to say a Dvar Torah. So one rabbi said to the Rebbe, an Avil's not allowed to learn. What do you want, how can I say a Dvar Torah? You're not allowed to learn. So the Rebbe said, yeah, but you have an obligation to learn. I don't, but you do. So you say. So, this is where the story goes. The guy said a short pilpul, so to speak. And the Rebbe, when he finished, the Rebbe smiled and he said, can you imagine, with one taisis, this is what they, I could refute your whole thing, and I can't. Can you imagine the torture I'm going through? But the Rebbe said to the person, granted, I'm not obligated to him, but you are, so you have to learn. Okay.
So he has an answer, that's an answer for you. But Samuel, it's not for us, the guest.
Well, there's a different explanation over here what the Braisa means. We're in a mourner's house? Well, that depends how you learn the Gemara here. Yeah, according to one opinion in the Gemara, you do. What?
We should assume that it's for the guest.
Yeah, but the question is, the Gemara just said you don't make a bracha on it in the base level. But now the question is, which is the base level? If you say you don't make a bracha, but you could bring it. So if it's in the comforter's house, then you could bring it, but you can't make a bracha. Now, according to the other opinion, you can't bring it. But that's the custom, they make the bracha on the psalm?
Maybe it's not. Maybe it's only for the yortzeit. Oh,
for yortzeit, for sure you could. I think it's just to make a bracha this for the neshama, by making a bracha.
There's nothing wrong with the mourner saying borei mid mesonim, right? If he smells a flower and says blessed, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, the question, if it's there, but the question, do you bring it there?
No, if he happens to, come across.
Yeah, you sure you can make a bracha, yeah. I mean, even Saturday night by Havdalah, in the middle of Shiva, he also makes a bracha on the psalm. Yeah, that's done. Okay, Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "A malich in the beis ha'avol, you don't deliver food to the mourner's house. Lei betavla, not on a tray. V'lei beiskutla, not in a large bowl. V'lei bekadin, not in a large basket. Ela besalim, in plain baskets." Okay, and the Gemara is going to explain why, but basically, the difference like this. These trays or bowls or whatever it is, these are a sign of elegance. And to an Orville's house, these are all signs of elegance of the way you serve. So Gemara says you don't bring, you do it in a basket, in a simple basket. And then it says, in the olden times, they used to have a special bracha they used to make. We don't do it today. Okay, but basically, it was a bracha that Baruch Menachem Avelim. That's the bracha they used to make when they did Nichem Avelim. We say Hamokim Menachem Eschem, but they used to actually make a bracha. So it says you don't do that on Chol HaMoed. That means even if the person's buried on Chol HaMoed, you don't say this bracha on Chol HaMoed because there's no shiva on Chol HaMoed.
Who's saying it? The comforters or the
comforters?
Mourners?
The comforters. No, it says a blessing to Baruch Menachem Avelim was recited not by the mourner, by the other people. But aimed and beshur Menachemim, you stand in a row and comfort the mourners who paid in the sedabim, and then you send everybody home. In other words, like this: if somebody is buried Chol HaMoed, so like we know, there's no shiva. Correct? There's no shiva. They start after Yom Tov. So the Gemara says there's no bracha of Avelim when you're comforting them, but they stand in two rows for the mourners to walk through. That is on Chol HaMoed. And then you send everybody home, meaning they can't go back to be Menachem Avel, the mourner, because there's no shiva. So you don't bring people back to the house, so to speak. Upeit and Sarabim, you tell them to go home. Then he says also, Emanich and Asamita Berchev. They used to send Amita, like we said, in the olden times they didn't have coffins. They took them out on beds, on stretchers, straight to bury. Unless if they went, you know, overseas or whatever, from Eretz Yisrael, above or whatever. So it says, you don't put the bed down in the public street during the funeral. Why? But that causes people to stop making eulogies. And Chol HaMoed, there's no eulogies. So he says, Emanik Menichem Esamita Berchev. Why? Shle Lahargo says, but not encourage eulogies, which are forbidden in Chol HaMoed. And then he says, Lei Shal Noshim La'ilam. They never would put down the coffin. It's not a coffin, it's the bed of a woman in the street. They are covered because of dignity. And the Gemara is going to explain what the dignity is. There might be bleeding and it's disrespectful that the shrouds get dirty. Because again, in the olden times, and we're going to see this in the Gemara more as we go on now. In the olden times, they didn't do coffins, they didn't do all these things. They wrapped the people up in shrouds, which by the way, interestingly, we will learn, started from the days of Ram Gamliel. Because initially, the Gemara is going to say, rich people used to get buried one way, and poor people got buried another way, you know, expensive shrouds, cheap shrouds, or whatever, you know. So, and people got embarrassed. So they made takonis, everybody's buried the same way. But this started from the time of Ram Gamliel, and according to Wilson's opinions, that Ram Gamliel himself was very wealthy, was buried in simple white shrouds like they do today. In today, that's not law. You have to be buried in shrouds that everybody should be buried equally.
Shrouds and a talis?
Huh? Do you, so they would put the talis also, yeah.
Women, but
women have a talis? No, women have a talis. By man, you put a talis and you cut off one corner.
So you should be part of from titus. I mean,
it's not to laugh at the. Not to laugh at them. They don't have the opportunity to do. We'll see. I mean, the Gemara doesn't talk about talus, but
when he says that women don't put the coffin, people are covered.
Right.
It means always, not just.
Huh?
He means not only Chol HaMoed. He means
anytime. La'ela means ever.
Right.
By men, you don't do it to encourage eulogies. By women, you don't do it because it'd be disgraceful. It says because blood might flow from them, strain the shrouds, which would be an embarrassment. And the question is it only people, that women that die in childbirth, or other women? That was the whole.
The bleeding.
Yeah. Okay. So now he says, the Gemara says like this. Tan Rabbanon. Okay. Now the Gemara says what used to be and what's done. Berishena in the originally Ayomer Lechem beBeis HaOvel. They brought to the Beis HaOvel. How did they deliver food to the house of a mourner? Ashirim, rich people were brought beklasim shel kesef shel zahav in baskets of silver and gold. Va'aniyim besali nitzarim shel arava klufa. And the poor people, they brought in baskets of peeled willow twigs. Okay? Va'aniyim ispayishim, the poor people used to get embarrassed. Hiskinos that they made a takana, shi'akol mevim besali nitzarim shel arava klufa, that everybody brought in the cheap baskets, menech shkredim shel aniyim, out of respect for the poor. Then the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, but Ishayna Yemashkim Veisa Ovel." When they used to serve drinks in the house of an Ovel, so they used to serve Ashidim Bischuchis Levanim. in white glass, which was very expensive, in colored glass, which was cheap. The poor people used to get embarrassed. They made everybody drink only from colored glass, meaning the cheap glasses. Then the Gemara says, but initially, they would leave the faces of the people died, they would leave the face uncovered. Why? Because that would cause people... They used to leave the rich people's face uncovered because they would say, look how robust and handsome his face was, and now it's going to decay. But the poor people, they were hungry anyway, so their faces anyway were like thinned out. So he says, because they were anyway blackened because of hunger. For Ayanim is Vaishin, the poor people would feel ashamed. Not the dead people. People that were alive, that were poor, said, ugh, look what they're going to do to me. So they covered everybody's face because of the respect for the poor people. But initially they would take out the corpses in this dargish, okay, in the leather beds, right? In a regular bier, you know, like a coffin. Not a coffin, a stretcher. The poor people used to get embarrassed. They made a takana that everybody should be taken out like that, out of concern for the honor of the poor people. It's very interesting the way Chachamim made takanas, that poor people shouldn't be embarrassed. But initially, they used to put incense on the people that died with intestinal orders. Because then, if they died from intestinal orders, the corpse would smell.
Intestinal what?
Disorders. What did I say?
Disorder.
Disorder. And then the people with the intestinal disorders would be embarrassed. Hiskina, they made a takana, shemanichem tachas akil, that under everybody they put the spices, because of the living people that had the intestinal disorder, because they would say, oh, look what happens to me when I'm going to die, they're going to do this to me. So everybody's going to know that I smell. So therefore they made it to Tokana, you do it to everybody. Now they were embarrassed because the world would be, it would be announced to the world that they had this intestinal disorder. But originally, they would immerse the kelim on the count of menstruing women that died, meaning that they would tevel the kelim of the women that died when they're in nida. They would tevel the kelim. But your nidas chayis mispaishis, and the living nidas would be embarrassed that they were treated differently than everybody else, or like they bring down the Me'idi says, because they're treated. Everybody don't say, oh, they died when they were tummy. You know, it's like it's something everybody noticed. They didn't want it was an embarrassment. Then they made a takana, then you tevel everybody's dishes before after they died. Because of the respect out of the nidus. Now, the Gemara says he did things, mamish, out of respect for the other people. And the same thing it says, initially, there was a loch, it's in Hilchos Nida really, that years ago, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was a must. But even after the Beis HaMikdash, a woman, when she was a Nida, would go out with special Nida clothing that everybody she knew she was a Nida. And then later it stopped out of embarrassment, the same similar to this takana. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you had to know, because if you touched them, you couldn't go into the Beis HaMikdash. But nowadays, after it became irrelevant in the practical halacha, they said the takana, you don't do this anymore.
So what happened in Mashiach time to be coming again?
We'll figure it out when he comes. There won't be a concept of neither, but there will be tumah, the din of tumah tara will stay. In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe says though that he quotes the part Naber Meir Shana Yomus that there will be a din of Tumat Tara. But there's a question what it means over there. Then he says Merishenim at Bilam Agabi Zovim Mason. Initially, they were tabled the dishes also for Zovim that died. Zovim is different than Anita, but similar. Vayu Zovim Chayim is Vaishim, and the living Zovim would feel ashamed. His kinas and made a takana Shem at Bilam Agabi Akol. They would table everybody's dishes. Why? Mipnei kvedim shel zavim chayim, out of respect for the zavim that were alive. Okay. Okay. Then the Gemara says, but ishena yartzas ames kosher lekreviv yesim misasi. Originally, the expense of taking out the mess, meaning the expenses of the funeral, was bigger aggravation than the death of the deceased. Because it wasn't deductible. No, but he says what happened, it got to a point, the expenses were so great, I'd show you men kraven manichen aisi burchen. To kraven, the relatives brought the mess into the street and ran away. They couldn't afford the funeral, no?
It's not like funerals today. You dig a little hole and you put them in.
They used to have the caves. No, but he says like this. This is where the story of Rabbi Gamliel comes in. The wealthy would bury their dead in shrouds costing 1,000 zuz and more. The poor who could not afford such shrouds felt so embarrassed at not being able to provide dignified shrouds, they would run away. And then basically they dumped the responsibility on the tzibur. Okay, so they were more upset about the funeral expenses than the actual death. So what happened? Achabod am Gamliel, told am Gamliel came. The Nog Kalis, but Reish Ba'atzmi treated himself lightly. The Yotze beklei pishton, and he went out in simple linen garments. The Nogo Amacharav, and therefore, the following his example, the people went out with the simple shorts. Tesis says over here. What do you mean? No, kalis reish ba'atzmi. So tesis, a small tesis. Shetziva came b'shas b'tirasi. That when he died, Rav Gamliel told his. What do you mean? He did himself. He didn't bury himself. So the Gemara's lashon is funny because no kalis reish ba'atzmi means he did it. So what do you mean he did it? If he was dead, he didn't do it. So tesis says two meanings. One thing is that before he died, he told people to do it to him, or yesh mefarshim. That when somebody from his household died, Rabbi Gamliel put him on the regular cheap shrouds. But whatever it was, the Gemara says that after Rabbi Gamliel made the takana, that's why the halacha is interesting. Today, that's it. It's only shrouds. This that people dress in the garments that they, you know, many to, but the non-from people, by goyim, you dress them in the. Their clothing.
Three-piece suit.
Get a three-piece suit with a tie, get them all dressed up.
You look at the caskets up in the car.
In the car, in the horse.
Look, the caskets open too.
Yeah. Which is all forbidden according to halacha. According to halacha, you need to have tachrichim that everybody is the same. And that was in the Ram Gamliel. Before Ram Gamliel, the rich people were buried in rich clothing and they had shrouds, but very expensive shrouds.
What? Isn't it in the United States or in different countries different ways of burial than
by Yidden, you mean?
Yeah,
but the problem is in America you have certain government regulations that you don't have in America in Europe.
Yeah,
but even in the Frum cemeteries they'll do it the way they want to do it. It's just that you can't walk, you can't take a dead body out today in a stretcher, put him in a hearse in a stretcher. I mean, today you have a coffin, but you have no nails in the coffin and no metal in the coffin. But what they do in a lot of places, in New York they do it here also, if the right people are not looking in the right places. In New York they have, the proper way is that the mess is directly on the ground.
What's the mess?
The dead body, the corpse is directly on the ground. So in New York they have coffins that they figure they're made that with wooden pegs, but the coffin opens up and the mess actually lays on the ground. If you can't get it, what they do is they actually work in the grave. I mean, Chavak Kaddish in New York, or recently it was done here too, but they jump into the grave and they open the bottom of the box. Now, you can't do that in the other cemeteries here, because you have to put them into a cement box. That's for whatever the reasons of the law is, for earthquakes or whatever it may be, health reasons. Today you put them into a cement, those big white cement, you know, whoever went to a funeral knows. It's not really a problem because that's cement, and cement is also ground, really, karka. Cement is also earth. But you can't get in, you know, in certain places you can't do it any other way. They just won't let you. But in certain places they do it the right way. And he says, Amir Papa, for Idna Norig Alma. Today the minig of the world is Afilu Bitsar de Barzuza. They would dress the dead even in a canvas worth one zuz. In other words, the cheapest way to make everybody the same.
Rashi says canvas.
Huh? Yeah, canvas. Yeah, that's not the only place Rashi says canvas.
English canvas from Rashi?
No, canvas is a Hebrew word.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Rashi says it.
So, no, I'm saying it came... Rashi doesn't say balaz. Rashi is canvas. It's a Hebrew word.
Why does it say kalas reish ba'atzmi?
What should it say?
Kalas reish is like...
No, kalas reish means he treated himself lightly, meaning he was buried in the similar, simple thing.
I'm not saying
that. You want to say it means light-headed?
It doesn't mean that he's drunk.
Right.
No.
That's
the Schaif of Kadesh Rosh. That's not what it means here.
It's a related question.
Okay, and the Gemara says, a manich, what?
They say, about the Rebbe, that he never had a silver esrog box. Because if he did, then all the chassidim would buy it, and he didn't have the budget to buy it. Is that true? You ever heard
that?
That's it, I'm saying.
Chesnisht. Amr Rav Papa said, it said in the Mishnah, Manichin Samita Berchayv. You don't put the mita, the coffin, or the bed, the bier it's called, in the street, not to make eulogies, right? So Amr Rav Papa, Eimei Befnei Talmud Chacham. There's no Cholamed when it comes to a scholar. Meaning, a scholar that died, you can eulogize him even Cholamed. The Rishonim, right, by the way, that today our present day Torah scholars do not possess the qualifications of what the Gemara is talking about here. So today it's not done. No, but Rav Papa said by a real Talmud Chacham, there's no way. The Koshkin Chanukah put him, and definitely Chanukah and Purim, which are less than Chol HaMoed, for sure you can eulogize Talmud Chacham. But Hani Mili Bafanov. That's only when it's in his present. Meaning, if the coffin is there, then you could eulogize him and Chol HaMoed Chanukah and Purim. Aval Shalei Befanav. But now, if he's not there, meaning to go somewhere else and make a eulogy, that you're talking not allowed to, even for a Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara asks, Eini, it's not true. Va'od Av Kahana Savde L'Rav Zvid Minadah Befum Nara. Rav Kahana made a hesped on Chol HaMoed for Rav Zvid, who died in Nardah, and he made the hesped in Pumnara and Chol HaMoed, and the dead body wasn't there, and yet he made a hesped. So you see that you can make a hesped for a Chacham, even Shalei Befanov. Amir HaPapi, so the Papi answered, Yem Shmua Hava. That was the day they heard that he died. So the fact that they heard that day that he died is considered a Befanov Damya. It's considered in his presence. In other words, even though it was in a distant city where news doesn't travel fast, it took, let's say, a few days to get the knowledge. The fact that they heard it was considered as if the Talmud Chacham is in their presence. Okay, let's just finish up this Gemara, then we'll stop. Amar Ula Hesped Alev. Hesped refers to beating on the chest. It used to beat on the chest. The Chsiv, like it says, Al Shadayim saved him, on the breasts they beat, meaning since next to the heart. Tipuach, because later on in the Mishnah we're going to have the expression tipu metapches, maspidim, and mayalulis. There's a different things they used to do by funerals. Tipuach biyad, clapping with the hand, and kilus is mentioned beregel, with the foot. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabban, Rabbanan learned, Hamekales, the person that stamps with his foot in mourning, should not do it, besandal ele bin minol, should not do it with a sandal, only with a shoe. Why? Mipnei asakana, because he may break his foot. Because the sandal is very weak at the bottom. So the sandal is not holding on the shoe well, and the foot well. Right? The sandal doesn't hold well on the foot like a shoe does. So when you're going to be stamping your foot, the sandal is going to fall off, and you're going to break your hand, bang your foot on the ground, and you might break it. If you do it in a shoe, it's not a problem. That's what some of us learn the opposite. But you not stamp with a shoe, only with a sandal. Because the shoe is made with soft leather, and the sandal is made with wood, so it's stronger. The question, whichever one was stronger. So the past speed means